Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Christy Guevara Flanagan will discuss her new documentary about female superheroes. Limbaugh's defense of his misogyny gets positively baroque, and Rick Santorum expands the war on sex to porn. Rick Santorum is beginning to realize that his opposition to contraception is hurting the voters' view of him as electable. So he's sending his wife, Karen, out to try to do a little cleanup.
Oh, it makes me really sad that the media tries to do that to him. They try to make it look like he is something that he's not. Rick is a great guy. He's completely supportive of women. He's surrounded by a lot of very strong women. And I think women have nothing to fear with when it comes to contraceptives. He will do nothing on that issue. I think the real issue was what I had said about the religious freedom issue and not allowing the government to be intrusive in our lives and force us to do something against our conscience.
Of course, she contradicts herself with this statement. Religious liberty, of course, is a code phrase for supporting a law that allows your employer to invade your privacy and withhold health coverage you paid for because he disapproves of your sex life. That attitude is anti-freedom at its core. Freedom of employers to take away the freedom of employees is no kind of freedom at all. I will admit, I left for a week and really thought that Rush Limbaugh was going to slow his roll. For a man who claims to be so oppressed by so-called feminazis, he really doesn't seem to be actually compelled to rein in the misogyny one itty-bitty bit. I thought he'd at least have the sense to tone down the hateful anti-woman stuff until the whole slut thing blew over, but if anything, he's turned up the volume. And not that there was any doubt, but that pretty much destroys his claim to have apologized for calling Sandra Fluck a slut. I recall being very firm that Limbaugh was basically calling all women sluts and prostitutes when he called Fluck by those names, but his phrasing made it clear that he equated using medical services for reproductive health care with prostitution. Since that group includes pretty much all women, he was calling all women prostitutes, which he clearly thinks is a very bad thing to say. Well, he went ahead and confirmed the theory that he thinks all women are essentially prostitutes, i.e. that we have sex in exchange for compensation from men, and that this is the way that it's supposed to be.
People, as the Republicans have a war on women, which, again, as mayor of Rioville, Republicans date women, they marry women, they have children with women, and they take women to dinner, they buy women diamonds, and they open car doors for women, and so yet there's this Republican war on women.
That you enjoy having a woman clean up after you, have sex with you, and bear your children doesn't necessarily mean that you don't hate women. Even men who burned women at the stake while accusing them of witchcraft appreciated women for their housework and sexual value. Saying you pay top diamond dollar for these services and make meaningless gestures to suggest women are fragile, not quite human creatures, doesn't change this. What's most interesting about this rant is that he neglected to remember that many Republicans are women. And of course that some are pro-choice, but they are just getting shut out. He just simply forgot that women can do people things that he does, such as vote Republican. Which suggests to me that what Limbaugh was stabbing at when he flinging the word slut and prostitute around was this. He was trying to argue that women aren't really people, and therefore it's offensive to let them have people health care. Instead, he views them as very expensive pets. And while you may buy your pet nice things and, you know, open the door for your pet, I know that I do, you hardly expect to show up at the doctor and see Fifi waiting in line with you. So maybe Limbaugh would be less offended if women went to the veterinarians for our birth control? This attitude explains very well his other defense against charges of misogyny.
No, how can I be anti-woman? I even judged the Miss America pageant. I even had Miss America that year on this program.
I really think the Limbaugh thinks women are pets, not people theory is being held up here. Beauty pageants are like dog shows. except that the contestants have to do more tricks. That he wants women to parade around in front of him and be judged on whether they fit the American Kennel Association's breed requirements hardly suggests to me that he's a supporter of women having human rights. The next question is how this fits into defenses of Mitt Romney strapping his dog to a car roof. Defense number three Limbaugh offered was no more convincing.
You know, I have affectionately referred to the NOW gang as the NAGS, the National Association of Gals, for over 15 years. And the head NOW gang babe was asked what she thinks about that yesterday on television. Yeah. After 15 years. Outraged. They are outraged.
The old misogyny gets grandfathered in excuse, eh? The idea that if someone has been a sexist pig long enough, they get a free pass for life and no one can ever observe that is indeed what they are? Convenient, that one. If taken seriously, it actually means no one can demand progress ever, if you think about it, since it would mean challenging people who've held oppressive beliefs for many years. So, no. I think that having been a jerk a long time just reaffirms my belief that you're a jerk now. But as much as Limbaugh appears to be losing it, he is, believe it or not, holding it together better than some of his pale imitators on Fox News, like Greg Gutfeld.
Because feminists should be outraged if they have to pay that much money for gas in order to drive to the clinic to get their free birth control pills.
Rule number one of comedy. If you have to stretch that far for a joke, it's never going to be funny. And that's even if you're a liberal and more inclined to actually grasp what's funny. Honestly, for all that Fox claims that liberals are the ones who want to give money to the undeserving, I have to point out they're pretty much running a charity for comic hacks. Can't make it in the real world of making funny? Grab a chair and park yourself on Fox News, where everyone will pretend to laugh at your nonsense as long as you stay on message. I'd like to welcome Christy Guevara Flanagan to the program. Christy is the director of a new documentary that debuted at South by Southwest Films this year, titled Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. It's a documentary about the evolution of Wonder Woman and other images of female power in pop culture. Welcome to RealityCast, Christy.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, what inspired you to make a documentary about this subject?
Well, it was kind of a gradual accumulation of data, you could say. The first thing that happened was that I had read a New York Times article probably over 4 years ago now that introduced Gail Simone as the first woman to ever pen Wonder Woman in the comic book series. And I hadn't really paid much attention to Wonder Woman as a comic book. I knew her more from the TV show. But it just kind of struck me as interesting that here was this very iconic symbol of female power, and yet she had never actually been written by a woman. And I began to research a little bit into Wonder Woman's background, and I didn't know anything about her outside of the TV show. And what I found was just this really fascinating character who'd been around for almost as long as Superman, and had some very interesting origins, you know, was created to be a role model for young girls, and who had, throughout history, had these different points where she'd been reconfigured and retransformed depending on what the era kind of called for. And if you laid that side by side with what's going on with the women's movement from about 1940s and on, you just got this really interesting story and an interesting way to kind of explore how women in pop culture have in some ways changed because of the women's movement and because of women's gains in society, and how these characters are still, their power is still mitigated. You know, there's not equality when it comes to male and female heroes in pop culture.
So can you kind of talk a little bit about Wonder Woman's origins? Because it is a really fascinating story.
Wonder Woman was created by William Moulton Marston in the early 40s. And he, what was, there were a lot of things that was interesting about him. He, you know, this was the birth of comic books. This was the golden age of comic books. And he really saw comic books as having potential to teach kids better lessons about humanity and that these heroes could in fact be role models. And he wanted a character that was different from kind of the male violent leading, violent type characters. So he did not have a big background in comic books. He hadn't written any before. He was actually a psychologist and written a few books. Kind of a pop psychologist, and he'd also been the creator of the systolic blood pressure test, which was the precursor to the lie detector. So he just had these, you know, he was kind of this pop psychologist, kooky inventor, and he also had two partners, two female partners. He had a wife, and he had another woman who was living with him, and they all raised their families together. So, just a very fascinating man for 1940, and gets together with the comic book company and decides to create a character that is a woman that can appeal to girls and still appeal to boys. You know, she had to be cute and not too threatening. And Wonder Woman was launched, and she ended up being a big hit. And he worked on the character until his death in 1947. And that was really the only comic book he did.
And when he was working on it, Wonder Woman was a pretty empowering character, right?
She was surprisingly empowered, I find. When I went back and reread those comics, she came from the Amazons, which is an all-female society. She had real relationships with other women, the other Amazons, her mom, as well as when she came to, you know, this side of the universe, she taught other young girls. She enlisted the help of these college girls called the sorority girls to help her in her adventures. And to this day, that is, you know, something that you just don't see, strong women having relationships, healthy relationships and not competitive relationships with other women and girls, and that were raised by moms. A lot of times you have these heroic women in pop culture that are actually raised by their father figures and have been mentored by men and have learned their skills of combat and survival skills from men. So it was very different for the time, and it's still anomalous today. And the stories were very adventurous. She's at the center of her own universe. You know, she's not a sidekick. She's not a girlfriend. She's often saving men and even her love interest, Steve Trevor. And there were other ways, though, in which his vision was limited as to what it would mean to be a powerful woman. So there was no feminist script at the time that he could follow. He was kind of just making up what he thought would be an empowering woman. And so you kind of see these funny ideas being played out in the comic book that probably went beyond the heads of a lot of the kids, but as an adult looking into it, it's pretty interesting. Ideas that if men submitted to women, the world would be a better place, and that women were just naturally better leaders because they were, you know, they loved more. And there's quite a controversy about the bondage and fetishism in the comic. Now, some people say that that's just what all these comic book characters had. If you look at Superman or any of these early characters, they were always getting tied up and released, and Wonder Woman was no different. But you do, you know, I can see the point to that argument in looking at it. It did seem like she was bound pretty frequently, and in fact, when she was bound by her bracelet, she lost all her power. That was her kryptonite.
So she kind of set a tone for a lot of other characters. I mean, obviously, I can't really personally think of any, like, female superheroes who were, like, active or action heroes until, like, at least the 60s with Emma Peel. But how do you feel the kind of model from the 60s on of the female action heroes kind of played out?
Well, I think it's played out in a variety of different ways. You know, once a lot of these characters migrated to television in the 70s, and like Emma Peel and Wonder Woman, and the Bionic Woman wasn't a comic book character and might not be considered a superhero. But you begin to see these women who can fight back in other formats, in other mediums. So they, from comic book to television and eventually to the big screen. And, you know, there's been some real successes where some of these characters have gone on to achieve pretty iconic status, and we remember them as being inspiring and transformational. When you see a character like Ripley from Aliens or Linda Hamilton's character from Terminator 2, those were real firsts for women on screen. See women that athletic and physically capable, to see women really leading in a way, particularly Sigourney Weaver's character from Aliens, leading other men and being triumphant, all the way to more contemporary TV shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which seems very, very sincerely empowering on a lot of different levels. She taught other people how to be leaders. She had a community that was very supportive of each other. Oftentimes you have these superhero types who are just lone wolves, right? Just, they sort of sacrifice any social life or any other kind of relationships in order to save the world and save the universe. And Buffy was transformative in that she really relied on her community. She taught her community of women, men, how to be better leaders, how to find their inner hero. And I think because it was like a comic book, a series, there was a lot of time for these kinds of storylines to really emerge. But there hasn't been anybody quite as iconic as Buffy since. So we're still waiting for somebody new to emerge, another female character that can kind of take the place of the Buffy and the Wonder Woman types.
Do you think we're backsliding when it comes to that? Because, I mean, I'm thinking of, like, the popularity of Twilight and that character. She's just, like, the damsel in distress on steroids. Like, all she is just somebody who's beaten up and put into trouble constantly.
It does seem like there's an interesting pattern of progression and then, you know, moving backwards in terms of these kinds of characters. So you've seen that before. In the 40s, you had somebody like Wonder Woman emerge, and then the 50s was just a time where women were not as empowered culturally and in society. And again, then you don't see those same types of characters in books, literature, or TV. So there's this interesting backlash to those characters and to those periods where women are just kind of empowered. Again, in the 80s, in response to feminism, you see kind of a backlash where men had to be, you know, they became like these Rambo, really buff characters, and women had to be seen as legitimate romantic partners. You know, they weren't allowed to exist outside of that. And I think again today we have that similar regression. And I think that coupled with a hypersexuality of our characters in the last 20 years of female characters has just really made for kind of an absence of something for people, for women and girls and you know, men that like strong, heroic women as well to really grab hold of. And you do, like, Twilight is not. She's just, you know, she just doesn't kick ass like these other women did. She's very mousy. She basically lets a stalker into her life. You know, it's a very different narrative for maybe a different time. I don't know. I think there's some interesting ideas, some interesting narratives on the horizon. We have the Hunger Games that has some potential. And it's also a series, so that has potential for a real narrative to develop and for it to have staying power, I think, in terms of a mainstream way. So I'm hopeful, but I'm still waiting.
My guest today has been Christy Guevara Flanagan, and her movie is called Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. It premiered at South by Southwest, and you can find out more by going to vaquerafilms.com/Wonder Woman. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Christy.
Thank you.
Rick Santorum is getting, pardon the expression, a bit overexcited. His anti-contraception views went mainstream in a way that he probably never anticipated. And so he's expanding the war on non-procreative sex to include an attack on masturbation, specifically performed in the way that is favored in every home with a dude and a computer.
The proof is in the prosecution. Under the Bush administration, pornographers were prosecuted much more rigorously than they are under existing law than they are under the Obama administration. So you draw your conclusion.
Well, what's
whether,
your conclusion?
Whether the administration has not put a priority. My conclusion is they have not put a priority on prosecuting these cases. And in doing so, they are exposing children to a tremendous amount of harm.
I'm not disputing that it's not great for children to walk in on a parent having a private moment in front of the computer. But that's an argument for putting locks on your door and not for throwing people in jail. Of course, Santorum is an adherent to the anti-choice belief that young people would have no interest in sex if Planned Parenthood didn't tell them about condoms. So it follows that they'll believe that you can basically keep the young from ever feeling the stirrings of lust by scrubbing the internet clean of porn. To which I say, good luck. Even if you did throw some pornographers in jail, a million more will rise up in their place. Even if you could scare people out of making porn in the U.S., they'd just make it somewhere else and distribute it online. This is just about releasing that sadomasochistic urge to throw people in jail for the sexy. While people all over the gender spectrum enjoy porn, the kind that Santorum is thinking about is probably the kind that's geared mainly at men, both gay and straight. While the conservative base is completely on board with an all-out assault on women's sexual rights, I do believe he may have gone a step too far with this one. Roy Adroso at the Village Voice recorded many conservative bloggers doing the unthinkable and actually criticizing Santorum, though they claim that he's being a liberal with this one. I guess they think that liberal is anyone doing something they just don't like. They were cool with Santorum when they thought the every sperm is sacred thing was just a cover story for the lady hating, but now they fear he means it. He did lose the primary in Illinois. Coincidence? Jank at Young Turks suggests not.
Santorum. You know, Santorum has been doing much worse in Illinois than expected. I don't know. Maybe it's the pro-porn vote, which, by the way, for at least for males, would be 99% of the voters in Illinois, let alone the rest of the country. And remember, we did the story about how the Bible Belt loves porn even more. So once you get into the red states, this could really cost Rick Santorum.
The real question here is, how will Santorum's anti-porn stance go over with Rush Limbaugh? Remember, Limbaugh said that women should be required to turn over sex tapes if they want contraception coverage, and Santorum is happy to take good press from Limbaugh. I'm really seeing the Limbaugh exemption in this, where porn is okay as long as it's non-consensual and used to harass women who want reproductive rights. Seriously, I will never, for the life of me, understand people who just freak out at the mere thought of someone else feeling pleasure and start obsessing over ways to stop it from happening. using the children as an excuse is particularly grating, since the underlying assumption here is that children are somehow better off if adults are unhappy and unsatisfied. I'm skeptical of that assumption. But I will say that Santorum's anti-pleasure agenda is backfiring, since people continue to be sexual, and now they get to have fun laughing at him.
He's not saying he would get rid of all pornography, just some of it, just the dirty stuff. And in fact, this is what a porno would look like under Rick Santorum.
Hi.
Hey. Did someone order an extra large sausage pizza?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Thank you.
In case that wasn't obvious, the pizza guy shows up and delivers the pizza, which she pays for before shutting the door. It was on Jimmy Kimmel. Like I said before, once you attract the entire world of comedy to make endless fun of you, that's really not good for your long-term political prospects. And now for the wisdom of wingnuts. No man could ever actually think of women as more than obstacles between them and vaginas edition. That appears to be Greg Gutfeld's point with another one of those things he says that I think are supposed to be jokes.
Guys in the 70s got into feminism because they were looking for easy sex without commitment. And you can get that as long as you march with them, you believe in abortion. It's the ticket to get away with everything.
The most important thing to remember about anti-feminists is they simply don't believe that men could like women. They really do think all men believe women are objects for sexual release, air creation, and housework, but not people in and of themselves. All these comments make much more sense if you believe that. Personally, I think more of men, and believe them perfectly capable of liking women and seeing women as human beings.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.